imagine you're Mark Delaney, right? You know, you've been given, let's say, 18 hours to prepare, get a team together and play Liverpool in an FA Cup game that's going to be televised. And John Terry keeps fucking ringing you. Like, what does this cunt want? Like, what was John Terry saying to Mark Delaney on those phone calls? All right, mate. This is mad, isn't it?
Oh, God. I hope I don't get it. Hey.
Hi, guys. Jack Grealish here. Delighted to say that I've signed a new deal with Aston Villa.
So I left while you were sleeping, that's all it took.
And that chalked. Absolute fucking shambles. Out of the cup, 4-1, hammered again, at home. Disaster. Smith out. Nah. I'm going to start with possibly the greatest tweet of all time from Peter Spencer. This must be what it's like to be a Leeds fan. Lose 4-1 and get all the praise. That's certainly what's happening. Obviously, completely different circumstances. Points of young lads thrown together 24 hours beforehand. They were told they were going to be playing the Champions of England. These boys hadn't even been playing together. They hadn't played a match in 4 weeks. One of them was pulled back from a loan spell. It was just a shit show trying to put a team together. Never mind put a good team together to be able to compete with Liverpool. But they did it, and I thought the scenes when Louis Barry scored was just warmed the heart. Like, it was genuinely just a bunch of teenagers who couldn't believe what was happening, and they were over screaming in each other's faces. It was really, really nice, and like, just they did compete. I don't like, I was reading a piece today, it was like, you know, Mark Delaney told him, Villa fans love effort, and if you try your hardest for this club, then you know you'll do well. And it's like, that's the same for every fan of every club. Like, who doesn't want to see players try hard? Well, these boys did try really hard, and they did really well, and they did themselves proud. Should never have been in the situation, but I'm sure they were delighted with it. And it actually got me thinking about Pep Guardiola. Remember the Burnley game 2 years ago where he only named 6 subs because he said any other players? He couldn't find one more player lying around Man City, the most expensively assembled squad and youth system in the world. He just brought 6 players instead of 7 on the bench. And when I was seeing how much this meant to the Villa players and how good it's going to be for a lot of them, I just thought, you know, people were tuning into this, I think, because of what was happening. It was a nice story. And I thought, what an absolute prick Pep Guardiola is. Just an absolute mess of a man. But, yeah. So, what do you think, Liam? This is like this is the magic of the cup, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, you've put a positive spin on it there, but like, let's not get away from the fact there was an absolute capitulation between the 60th and 65th minute. I mean, these boys are going to have to learn that it's not good enough to concede 3 goals in 5 minutes against any opposition, let alone the champions. If you do that, you're not going to win very many football matches.
Well, do you want to get into that now?
No, but like, you've covered a lot of it there, but yeah, on a more serious note, the fact that it took Liverpool an hour to put the game away is absolutely incredible, and it's not the same as being a Leeds United fan, particularly if you consider the fact that they conceded after 4 minutes. Like, no matter how positive, mentally strong those boys are, how much it was reinforced by the management team or even by the senior players on social media, which was great to see before the game and during the game actually, but to concede that early, it could easily have destroyed them psychologically and then on the scoreboard.
Yeah,
you know, oh fuck, it's going to happen. Everything we feared. I mean, if Tyrone Mings was on the pitch, that could have been a lot worse. Could have been over a lot more quickly with his propensity for downing tools and disassociating himself from the incoming shitstorm. But even in a wider context, like, you know, not only like the team was assembled, hadn't played in 4 weeks, 5 of them were under 17. Like, they've never had to play like this before. Like, they would never have had to have been so tight and so disciplined and so defensive.
Yeah.
To put in a performance like that and against the English champions, it's right that everybody's applauding it. This isn't the same as saying well done to Leeds for losing 6-2 to Manchester United.
And again, again, they're delighted probably that they got the chance. Of course they are. But the fact that this game had to go ahead is just, this is the worst thing about English football and English media, I think. Like, you know, the idea that the FA Cup couldn't possibly be moved around, it's just so stupid. And what's actually the most annoying thing about this is the narrative that you would see on social media of people who are just gladly accepting that as well. You know, people are like, hang on, why was the Man City game or the Newcastle game postponed? Everyone's like, ah, but the FA Cup fourth round is in 2 weeks' time. It's like, well, fucking move the FA Cup fourth round. The FA Cup fourth round? Who gives a fuck? Move it back. Like, you know, as if it would be sacrilege to tamper with the FA Cup fourth round and say, like, that can no longer be played in the first weekend of February. Like, what does that even mean? Like, the, you know, the FA Cup finals on May 15th, nothing we can do about that. You know, if you can move the Premier League, a competition that people actually care about and a competition that actually matters, and if you can say that, like, you know, we'll finish the Premier League at some unspecified date as long as it's done before August, you can do it with the FA Cup. Now, again, who gives a fuck? Like, you know, nobody wants to be in the FA Cup anyway. But it's just a shambles that the game had to go ahead, especially at such short notice.
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt about it. The FA Cup is the worst competition in the footballing calendar. All the FA Cup does is get in the way of weekend Premier League fixtures. Yeah. That's all it does. And then when your season's over, if you've managed to stumble your way into the final, then it's interesting, then it's important. But before that, who gives a fuck? I mean, at least the EFL, the Carling Cup or whatever it is now, the Carabao Cup,
yeah,
at least that's midweek. That adds a bit of extra spice, a little bit of extra something at the start of the season. You get to see more of your squad. It's a really good competition for fans. Well, certainly for me, and I'm a fan.
Yeah, a Liverpool fan actually said to me yesterday, like, you know, were you saying the same thing last year, you know, when Villa hammered Liverpool's youngsters? Because I was saying about the FA Cup, because if you couldn't move that back, and Liverpool were obviously away playing a World Cup, where the EFL Cup quarterfinal was supposed to go ahead. They didn't have to play, they still have a wider squad to choose from. Like, they didn't have their entire first team squad, including players like Chucky Mwenke, who couldn't even play either because, like, he's been training with the first team squad. So even though he's an underage player, and this would have been a big break for him, like, he just couldn't be part of it because he was part of that bubble. But my only response to this was the EFL Cup is an infinitely better competition than the FA Cup. So I do take it a bit more seriously and say that the show must go on with that. Especially, like, yeah, Liverpool playing the World Cup, it's different to COVID.
Yeah, I actually thought that was a really weird decision from Liverpool. I mean, could they not have just sent their second string 11 to that quarterfinal and brought the youngsters as the subs for the World Club Cup? Yeah. I mean, would Shaqiri not have been better served playing in a Carling Cup quarterfinal?
Yeah.
Instead of just sitting on the bench and not playing over in Qatar?
Yeah, or definitely, like, at the very least, they could have done a mixture of it. You know, if they still wanted... would never have happened, like, worst case scenario, like, that so many players got stricken down when they were away.
Yeah.
You know, they had to start digging into those recesses of their squad. Like, that would never have happened. So, just had a lot of players there filling in the numbers, and they could have done that with younger players, yeah, and had players play in a quarterfinal match. Like, you know, it was a big game. It was the EFL Cup. Villa ended up going to the final, like Liverpool would have. But, yeah, sort of concerned a bit now about the preparations for the Spurs match, which is supposed to be Wednesday. You know, just the fact that you're not training. And on top of that, like, you just don't know how this is going to affect people. Like, players might not be the same. Like, 14 players have been confirmed as positive cases. Like, that's at the minute. And 9 of them, first team players. I think that means 9 out of the 11 that usually starts. Like, you know, most of them will probably come out the other side of it okay, but again, it's not ideal that you're not training now when all our teams are, and you're not together when all our teams are. But there could be long-lasting effects for some of them. Like, I know there's theories about Ziyech at Chelsea still suffering the consequences from it, but that's hard to tell because he's playing with Frank Lampard, so it's not a pure sample. Like, we can't see Ziyech with COVID without Frank Lampard. That would be a reliable sample. But I do have an inside source at Spurs who reckons that the game won't even go ahead. So Spurs apparently are expecting to be called off anyway, and I think that would be the best thing for Villa in this situation.
Yeah, that would be a great outcome. In a terrible situation to not have to play Spurs with a depleted squad and to be out of the FA Cup early on. Great.
Yeah, but it is. We did say if Jack Grealish got it, we should just strike down the whole squad. And I have my suspicions that somebody was listening to this podcast. 9 first team players, I've had 14 in total. It's like, yeah, let's make sure that we can absolutely not play or train because Jack Grealish has got it.
Yeah.
I don't want to turn this podcast into a speculation of who has a very dangerous disease. Liam?
No, neither do I. And I really hope that, you know, not that I want to show favouritism, but I hope Jack Grealish is safe and sound.
So Louis Barry is Irish again. Obviously, he played with England under-15s, and then he went to Ireland under-15s, and played with Ireland under-16s as well, before everybody in England realised how good he was, and he went back to England. He's obviously from England, but watching him last night, I'm thinking, let's get him back in. Stephen Kenny needs to pick up the phone. Ireland are always short on strikers. This boy looks like he knows what he's doing in front of goals. He showed that. Although, it was a really nice ball from Callum Rowe to set him up. But it was Reece Williams exposed again for his lack of pace. And somebody texted me last night saying, Reece Williams is slower than you back there.
Now that is damning. But it's not even his lack of pace. The angle of his run, he's all over the place.
Yeah.
And he's so much bigger than Barry that he has to do something about his body shape there to stop that run across him. But you're right, when he gets through on goal, it's an absolutely incredibly composed and calm finish. Cuaighan Kelleher, as an all Irish man, didn't look great, I don't think. It's a good finish, but I don't think he covers the goal particularly well. And it's not that far away from Kelleher's body either. I think he probably could have reacted a bit better. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's a lovely finish, and Christ almighty, could Ireland do with a few players that can finish, never mind finish with such calmness.
You're right, like even his body position, it looked like, you know, now this is a split second before he hit it, but it looked like he has to go that way now, and I think a better keeper is reading that now, and almost getting inside. Yeah, he's probably covering the angles a bit more, or he's making his body bigger and getting inside Barry's head to make him think, right, I have to go inside now instead of around the keeper. But you're like, yeah, Reece Williams, his footwork, his positioning, his speed was all a mess, and like that was showing up when Fabinho, who was coming from midfield basically, ended up catching right up and being the closest player to Barry by the time he hit it. But yeah, what do you think? Like, this boy, we've been waiting for him to come through. I think he still needs to develop physically. He's only 17. He's 18 in June though. Like, we've seen players come through at 17 and light it up. Like, I'm thinking Mason Greenwood, Marcus Rashford was tearing it up at 18. But he just doesn't look physically developed enough yet. But he definitely looks like he knows what he can do when he gets through.
Yeah, like there was another one at the, you know, start of the game, it was 10 minutes into the game when Villa finally got a touch of the ball. And he goes galloping down the right wing.
Yeah.
And okay, it gets bad defending again. I think who is it for Liverpool is expecting the centre half to come across, and neither of them deal with it. But, you know, he's shoulder to shoulder and he manages to nudge him off, and he stays on his feet and he gets to the byline. And he shows the composure and understanding that he can't cross it yet. And he takes another touch closer to the byline because he's waiting for the forward to be in a position. Then that's high praise. But the physical development thing, obviously, it's important. I mean, it's very easy to say something like, you know, Iniesta and Messi weren't big. Obviously, they're still strong men. They've got a low center of gravity and stuff. But Mason Greenwood is a lot bigger this year than he was at the start of last year. And the start of last year, he was still good. You just have to find ways to get them into the game that doesn't involve being shoulder to shoulder with Fabinho.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I don't know what it is. I think maybe this is just something that you don't develop. But I think when I think of physical development as well, I think of just a bit of explosion across the ground. Like, you know, to somebody who... It's not even size or even strength and all, but it's just somebody who's a man, you know, and now they're at the capacity of like them being able to move across the ground and control their body. And like, there was one stage after that was a really nice run down the right, but there was another stage where he was sort of tripping over the ball. It looked like a bit of nerves as well, but he looked like a kid, you know. I think he had Reece Williams in front of him and he was thinking about whether to go around him or not, and he was just sort of, he looked panicky. He ended up finding a teammate but then falling flat in his face. And I just think there's a difference, you know, when you see a man doing that. Like, you know, he just it did look more in control of himself.
Like, I think the difference is when you see a man doing that, it's more embarrassing because he's a man. But like, it still happens. I think that one, he tries to go past the lad. He's trying to, you know, show him his hips and go around him. And then the ball gets nicked away and he turns and slips. Like, that just happens to people. That could have just been his studs. Yeah. The way he gets across Williams, the confidence. Like, he obviously has enough confidence in his own strength to do that. Maybe that's because he's playing with smaller players normally, but Williams is a huge man himself. And like, he cuts across him, does everything right. And then, you know, yeah, a couple of seconds later, he's miles ahead of him because Williams is so slow. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I'd have to see him a few more times and with Villa having more of the ball before I'd be able to understand his physical capability.
All right, we're going to get into WhatsApp whinges. Don't worry, it's not about the game.
I burst onto the scene, didn't I? And I was going to be the next best thing.
Oh, who was it that said? There was an interview somebody recently and they said that he's always positive. It was Micah Richards.
Hold on, I played for England at 18, youngest ever defender to play for England.
It was Micah Richards, he was talking on Sky Sports and he said he's always positive. Sometimes you wish he wasn't as positive. Like, he said it was too nice.
Right.
What do you think of that?
I think Micah Richards should shut the fuck up. What the fuck has Micah Richards ever done for Aston Villa? Dean Smith got Aston Villa promoted from 14th in the championship. Micah Richards was just there collecting 40 grand a week while that was all happening.
He's just brilliant. He's just top. What a guy to work with, you are, honestly.
What's up, Winges? First one. Should Villa not wait to see if Ross Barkley is capable of playing more than 5 games before trying to sign him permanently?
Well, I think he played 6.
He played 5 and 1 minute.
That all comes up in his appearance count. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. If you look back at Ross Barkley's career, by the time he's 23, I think, he's played 200 games for Everton and England. And with the way Ross Barkley plays, that's 200 games packed with high-intensity sprints.
Yeah.
So... And I think even at the start of his career, he wasn't injured. He wasn't injured at all. And I think he even had a 3-year spell of just playing for Everton with no injuries at all. And then, boom, hamstring injuries roll him out for essentially the entirety of the 17-18 season. Now, that's worrying. But another way to think about it is that he transferred clubs during that. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility that he forced himself back too early to try and make an impression, just too eager. But then again as well, the next season he plays 50 times in a really good Chelsea team. Like, okay, he's sharing a position with Kovacic during that season, but you know, he still plays 50 times for a team that won the Europa League, finished third, and was managed by Sarri as well. So they're playing really high energy football. And the season after that, he has a foot injury, but it's a bone injury. So, you know, that's irrelevant to this conversation. So I don't know. So it essentially has a big injury, a hamstring injury that recurs during a whole season and rolls him out, having had no injury before that and played 200 games. And then he has another 2.5 seasons of no injuries until he signs for Villa. I think it's tricky for Villa as well, because not only is Ross Barkley a very good footballer, he's a name. He carries an England international premium, generates more excitement, more headlines. Signing him shows intent and, you know, highlights that we're serious. Like, not only because we're signing a good player, but because we're signing a player that everybody, we've all talked about, they're discussed. He's been involved at some level in the public discourse around football for 8 years. He was straight into the England team. He was the new Wayne Rooney whenever he came onto the scene. You know, Ross Barkley's a big name. Jack Grealish likes him. It just, whenever you sign him, it makes it seem like Villa are really serious.
Okay, this is good. This is good. I like this. Because, you know, when I go into my little spirals, I was thinking 27-year-old, injury-prone, you know, at the minute, because he's missed more games than he's played for Villa. Now, in fairness, he's just turned 27, so it's a good age to be buying somebody, as you say, an England-caliber player. And I'm still, to be honest, I'm still for buying him. You know, I want Villa to buy Barkley, but I just want to see him play again. Like, I want to know that he's back. Now, I did hear a theory that, like, you know, because Villa were going well, they just sort of just delayed his comeback rather than bringing him back at 95%. You know, just wait until he's 100%, that it's not going to come back. And
yeah, it mightn't just be Villa that are delaying that, Conan. You know, it could be Ross Barkley. He missed the whole season, 17-18, with hamstring injuries. Like, once you have one injury, if it recurs again, then it really starts fucking with your head, and you're not pushing it as much as you could. So, like, that would just be the absolute nightmare scenario for him, I'm sure, to, you know, have the 17-18 season again.
Well, hang on, because when I suggested to you the last day that Ross Barkley, I'm questioning his appetite for it, you shat on it. I know you're telling me that he doesn't have the appetite for it, he's shitting himself, he doesn't want to come back.
I'm saying he doesn't want to come back when he's injured.
That's fair enough. Like, what's up, Winch? This is more just in general. I think it was after what I was watching Liverpool v Southampton. If Villa weren't a fucking shambles, they could actually win the league.
Well, you know, that's one way to look at it, but the other way to look at it is that Villa still have a game in hand to go back into the Champions League places, which clearly shows that they're not a shambles. Like, it's a missed, it's a really good opportunity to finish high in the league, because it is a mess. Everybody's a shambles. So yeah. I don't think you can just say if Villa weren't the shambles, because everybody's a shambles, and that's what's given Villa the opportunity.
Yeah, but I think it's more, it was already annoying watching United fans celebrate and win the league after they beat Villa. They beat Villa and Wolves, and then they were joint top after 16 games, not even halfway through, and they were all going crazy. I actually put this on record while I'm about to do it. United won't be within 10 points of the title. I genuinely believe that, and I'm not even trying to exaggerate. It's not hyperbole. 3-4 games of bad run, United are out of the title race. Like that, and that will happen to them. That will definitely happen to them. Anyway, I don't want to get at United, but because of, like, you know, the fact that they're in the running at the minute, and then Liverpool went and lost to Southampton, giving United now the opportunity to go top. I was like, what the fuck? Like, why did Villa not just go and beat United themselves, and then they would be the ones being talked about?
Well, Villa tried to beat United. United got a lot of... United were fortunate in that game. I mean, I think a draw would have been a fair result, but, you know, United got a dodgy enough penalty, and Tyrone Mings slips in his arse for a shit header for Martial. But, like, the bigger games to worry about is the fact that they were so tactically naive against Leeds, and that carried into the Southampton game. They're the real ones that we left behind. All their games, we just didn't finish well. But, you know, everybody's a fucking shambles. Look, Villa squad's not good enough to win the title. I mean, look, the state of that team they put out last night.
What's the backup team? I don't want to...
And you had Martin Keown speaking about the lineup before the game, saying, oh, it looks like they're gonna play the same system as the first team, but the quality might not be there. Might not be there, Martin!
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Last one. This is one I have been thinking about. It's time for an NBA style Premier League bubble. So 4 months away. Like I thought this was extreme, right? And there's nobody would get on board with this. Then I realized, hang on, it actually only is 4 months to the end of the season anyway. 4 months away from your families and friends. Like, you know, they've had their chance. We gave them their opportunity. You can't be trusted. Your peers let you down. Like, you were probably all part of this. So, like, that chance is over. You don't have to go to this bubble if you don't want, and you won't. It won't affect your contract or anything. There's an opt-in, opt-out scenario. Obviously, Ross Barkley would opt out because he doesn't fancy it. you run off a season in a quarantine environment at St. George's Park or something, so everybody's in the one place, no one goes in or out of the bubble, and we just get to play, we just get to watch football. Because I swear to God, if the Premier League gets cancelled, I am finished. I can't do this without the Premier League.
And that's one of the most sensible things you've ever said. It is going to be very difficult to get through it without the Premier League. But what you also said there is Premier League players can't be trusted. So imagine we do create this bubble. Kyle Walker is going to bring the South African strain of the coronavirus into that bubble. And they're all going to be stricken. And it's over. Then it is over. We can't trust these lads, Conan, as you well know.
That's actually a really good point. But it would have to be extreme, like, you know, there's literally security guards and stuff on the outside.
Fucking hell.
It's going to be amazing in there. It'll be tough after a while mentally because you'll want out. But you're not getting out. If you do go out, you're not coming back. You know, somebody there at defence has been like, what do you need? I'll go get it for you. And I'm not even going to say what I need. It's not fit for air. But, yeah, you know, I was thinking about what would a Premier League player really need on a boring Tuesday night.
I don't know what the answer to that is.
Yeah. Yeah, like, what do you think? I don't know, like, if the NBA did it, surely the Premier League can do it.
Yeah, and just think about the other opportunities here. This could be a really, really interesting big brawler. Yeah. You know, for a show that's really lost its widespread appeal. Let's just have it be 200 professional footballers.
Matt Target trying to make conversation with Jack Grealish.
Matt Target trying to do some squats.
That'd be fucking amazing. I'd say a lot of them be up for it as well.
Yeah, but the problem is you have to get what would it actually be? 500 people to be up for it. I can't see that happening.
Yeah, you need all the players, all the staff, all the coaching. You need a pile of cooks. You need cleaners. You need people in the hospitality industry all to give up their lives for 4 months. We need security guards. We need to build walls around St. George's Park. Probably a couple of hotels in there.
Yeah.
But apart from that, like, let's do it.
Yeah, apart from that, I can't see any problem with this logistically.
All right. Just we're going to go into one category here. Might as well keep it going. Questions we can't answer, but probably will. I'm not going to go through the whole thing for these poor lads who tried their heart out last night and had a good run of it. But how raging must Liverpool be that they're through to the FA Cup fourth round?
Well, Liverpool obviously were taking it fairly seriously. I mean, they made 8 changes to the team that were embarrassed 7-2 the last time they came to Villa Park. You know, they knew they had to do something different to get out of the den. I know, like, I don't think Liverpool would be particularly raging. They have a few injury problems at the minute, but they've also got an amazing squad. They had to call Thiago over tonight to, you know, to see that game through. Like, yeah. Villa, Liverpool's second choice team is still incredible. They'll get far in the FA Cup so long as the draw is kind enough to them without putting any strain on their first 11, if that's what they want to do.
It was actually a dream scenario for Villa. So I think the last 2 times they played Liverpool, they beat them 5-0 and 7-2. It's like, now I would be advocating to just never play your full team against them ever again. Don't give them the chance to make amends for the 7-2. So you can always just hold that over every Liverpool fan, you know? Just like, yeah, we beat you 7-2 the last time we played.
Yeah.
It just doesn't count anymore. Just don't take them on.
I said that to a Liverpool fan recently and he said, yeah, why don't you stick that in your trophy cabinet?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair enough. How cold, honestly, do you think Mark Delaney was? He wears shorts all the time. I like it. I think he probably sees that as a, you know, this is what I did my whole football career, and now when I'm at a football match, I'm going to wear shorts. You know, that's me at a football game. That's how I prepare. You know, but yeah, he had the coat, he had the hat and stuff, but he must have been fucking freezing. Like, I was out for a walk yesterday, and I had so many layers on, and I was kicking myself because I didn't have a second pair of trousers. And he's standing there outside in a pair of shorts at Villa Park.
He's a hardy man, you know, but there is a certain cohort of the population that they see the sun and they don't understand that that doesn't necessarily correlate with the temperature. Yeah. And they just wear shorts automatically. And maybe Mark Delaney is in that group. God love him, though. It must have been fucking freezing, because he was essentially just standing there watching the match. And even after he scored, yeah, he looked happy. But like, it's not like he was running up and down. He wasn't, you know, doing a Mourinho, warming up by sprinting all the way to the corner flag and sliding on his knees. He was just standing there and did a little gentle fist pump. Yeah, it must have been miserable.
I can't believe, yeah, he wasn't a bit happier about it. I'd say he was still a bit shell-shocked just at what he had gone through the last 24 hours. And it was like, I was reading just everything that had to go into preparing, like up to and including these teenagers being dropped off by their parents at the stadium and stuff for the game. Like, it was crazy. And like, they didn't have any shirts, obviously, so they had to get new ones printed. But then, because most of them were all under 18, they'll have a betting sponsorship at the side of their shirt, so then that wasn't allowed. And there's just so much little logistics that were going into it. Never mind trying to prepare a team for it. And then the article, I think it was in The Athletic that I was reading it was like, you know, Dean Smith was checking in and helping out, and John Terry was helping out whatever way he could as well. It's like, what? Imagine you're Mark Delaney, right? You know, you've been given, let's say, 18 hours to prepare, get a team together and play Liverpool in an FA Cup game that's going to be televised, and John Terry keeps fucking ringing you. You're like, what does this cunt want? Like, what? Like, let's do that. A question we can't answer, but probably will. What was John Terry saying to Mark Delaney on his phone calls? All right, mate. This is mad, isn't it?
Oh, God. I hope I don't get it. Hey.
Or Mark Delaney might actually ring John Terry one time and be like, here, what? You know, what do the assistants normally do? Like, what do you think we should do here? Where should we go? And then Terry, like, yeah, did you see the thing I sent on to you on Instagram there?
Oh, check my stories, mate. I've got a great one with Steve Tidwell there.
We've got two more. Is Louis Barry ahead of Keenan Davis now for you?
Well, he scored.
That's like, I know Keenan Davis brings a lot. He's talking about being developed and all. And he obviously brings a lot of physicality. The way Grealish was talking about him after the restart, it was like, no, this boy's tearing it up at training. You can't mark him. You know, so he brings that. But he doesn't score. He doesn't look like he's ever going to score. Louis Barry's played one game for the club and he scored.
Yeah, and so it was such a composed finish as well, which has just not been associated with Villa strikers other than Ollie Watkins for the last 10 years. So it was delightful to see. He's definitely not ahead of Keenan Davis. Like, let's be honest, Keenan Davis has been always good and useful whenever he's come on. He causes havoc and, you know, he creates opportunities. But yeah, like Keenan Davis really needs to score. Like, if I was working with Keenan Davis, I would only be finishing drills that I'd be working.
Yeah. Yeah, if a Football Manager now, he would just be the only training schedule that he'd be doing is all finishing. But like, I think you called it well, like a couple of months ago, we were talking about it, just like Keenan Davis is so close to being really good.
Yeah.
But he needs to score and he needs to start being a bit more dangerous. Last one, and we just mentioned him there. Why is John Terry's 10K so slow?
I haven't. I'm going to admit to you here, Conn. I actually haven't been following John Terry's exercise regime. What's his 10K time?
That's probably what he was ringing up Mark Delaney because he's posting it on his Instagram account. Guess his 10K time.
Former professional footballer John Terry, fast enough over the ground. You're saying it's shit. 55 minutes.
Fucking hell! You're very close. 56 minutes and 11 seconds.
There you go. That's not great. But let's not. If I was a professional footballer, I would be, during that 15 years, I would be treating my body incredibly well. I would be living like a monk. I would be training so hard. John Terry was, okay, he's had some checkered history in his extracurricular activities, but he was an unbelievable professional.
Yeah.
Imagine how easy it is then just after that to just say, fucking thank God I don't have to do this anymore. And it happens to a lot of people, like, you know, Ronaldo, the Brazilian Ronaldo obviously is the classic example, but Roberto Carlos is the same, and John Terry is slipping. John Terry's not that young either. I mean, 55 minutes, 5, 10K isn't a terrible time, and we don't know that he was going full pelt there. He probably had more left in the tank at the end.
Well, I was guessing that he was. Like, why would you put it up? Like, you know, I'm thinking that this must have been his record that he's posting. You know, I need to show everybody that I got 56 minutes. Do you know what? Like, you know, people are probably listening. I'm not shitting on anybody's times or anything. Like, I don't. Like, to be honest, I actually am very good at that. I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, look, that person's running very slowly. If I see anybody out, even walking and stuff, I'm always just like, fair play. Because, well, A, I don't know how far they've just walked or ran. You know, so you could be seeing somebody going slow and they're 15K deep. I also don't know anything about their circumstances. And it's just always just like, yeah, fair fucks, like, go for it. Like, do you go for your own targets? But I feel like it could be a bit more judgmental with John Terry, just because, as you say, he was an unbelievable professional. So that's part of me thinking, like, he's only 40. He was playing a few years ago, and the way that he was treating his body and treating his career and stuff, I just thought even if he had let himself go, he would be doing a bit better. Like, you know, again, not shitting on anybody's time, but he's doing 28K or 28 minutes, 5K there, which is, like, John Terry, if he was doing that 2 years ago, that is such a doddle to him, and I would imagine that it's still gentle enough for him now, but it seems like that it's tough going for him.
Yeah, it's tough going for him, but, you know, maybe the other way to think about it is you're just being too tough on him. John Terry loves the fucking crack, Conan. Just let him have it. If you're lying around just trying to FaceTime Steve Sidwell all day, your 10K times are going to plummet.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And I think that's all we've got for you. Don't even know when we'll be playing again. If we get this bubble sorted, it'll be grand. We'll have a proper structure on the podcast. anything else you want to include before we go?
No, we'll try to do a podcast, even if we're not playing next week. I don't know. Maybe send in some discussion points if you want us to talk about anything.
Good shout, yeah. Send us a tweet about the Villa podcast and on the old Gmail account, thevillapodcast@gmail.com. Yeah, please do. Please help us. People have been asking us to do more podcasts, but they're not telling us what to talk about.
Selfish bastards.
The future of this podcast is in your hands. All right. Thanks very much, and hopefully we'll see you soon. That wind is calling my name, and I